Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, on our politics website, it's a free country. A couple of things that we have up there right now. We put the video of that cartoon battleship sequence from the State of the State address up there in case you didn't see it and want to see that little video game replication. It's kind of a, I don't know, it's a little cheesy. It's a little sort of a 1983 kind of video game, but it's funny and it makes a political point. So that's on itsafreecountry.org. And we also have a stream that's going to start shortly when members of the House actually start reading the Constitution on the House floor. We will stream that live on our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. This is the House Republicans' attempt to demonstrate the limits of government, to make the point that the Constitution does not authorize government to mandate that we own health insurance, and to show that, you know, liberals who believe in activist government are acting outside the realm of what the Founding Fathers had in mind. But last night, knowing this was coming, I actually read the entire U.S. Constitution. It was probably the first time in my life that I read it all the way through, though I'm sure I've looked at each piece of it at one time or another. And I was struck by how much the Constitution allows: war, taxation, regulation of business, how much it prohibits states from doing things on their own, including import fees on goods coming from other states and all kinds of things, and also how much it has changed over the years with the 27 amendments. So listeners will do a few things of our own with the United States Constitution as Congress reads it, and as the Republican leadership asks that all new bills be framed in constitutional terms. We'll review some constitutional basics with a constitutional scholar. We'll take your calls with any questions about the Constitution, and we'll start collecting online your favorite provisions of the United States Constitution, and we'll talk about them next week. This is, in a way, a sacred document, even if it is a living document, so I expect some strong feelings about parts of it. So start posting on our politics website your favorite provisions of the U.S. Constitution. That's at itsafreecountry.org. And with us now is Jeffrey Stone, professor of law at the University of Chicago and chair of the board of the American Constitution Society. Professor Stone, thanks so much for doing this. Welcome to WNYC.
My pleasure. Delighted to be here.
And again, listeners, this can be kind of random for right now. Any question you have about the Constitution or article you want to point up, and we'll do this in a longer version next week, but 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Professor, this little pamphlet I have here, not very long. How long is the Constitution? How long will it take them to read it on the floor, do you think?
Oh, 15, 20 minutes, tops.
That's
maybe
it?
Maybe 7 or 8.
What's longer, the original Constitution or the amendments enacted since?
Well, the original Constitution is much longer.
I learned upon reading the Constitution yesterday and then going further and reading about it that the most recent amendment to the Constitution was actually proposed by James Madison in the 18th century, but not enacted until 1992. You know about that?
Yes. This was recommended in order to prevent senators and representatives from voting on their own compensation. And so it basically provided that any change in the compensation has to be made prospectively. And the when it was proposed, it didn't have any time limit on it. And so it just took that long for the requisite number of states to ratify it. Generally now, constitutional amendments have time limits. So the ERA, for example, the Equal Rights Amendment, failed because it didn't get enough states ratifying it within the prescribed time. But it, originally, that was not such a prescribed time, so it just sat there all these years. And then finally, the last state or two came through, ratified it, and became part of the Constitution.
You would have thought that something like that, prohibiting members of Congress from raising their own salaries as opposed to raising the salaries of the next session, would have gotten populist fervor going much earlier than 1992.
Well, I think in the grand scheme of things, people didn't see it as a major problem, and it hadn't happened, in fact, in a way that created any particular furor. So, you know, had the members of Congress raised their own salaries in a dramatic way, that might have produced an outcry, but it actually didn't happen, so there was no historical moment that focused people's attention on it.
We know the Bill of Rights protects the rights of individuals against government, the right to free speech and religion, against unreasonable search and seizure, all of that. But the Constitution also empowers government to do things. And in fact, it tells government that it must do things, correct?
Yes, it absolutely gives it responsibilities. For example, the federal government is required to guarantee to the states a Republican form of government.
New York Times has an annotated Constitution on its site today. And here's one kind of funny thing. It says, witness these provisions which establish Congress's powers to raise and support armies and to provide and maintain a navy. And it says, under strict interpretation of the Constitution, if we all want to be strict constructionists, right, there would be no Air Force. Of course, there were no airplanes at that time. So I don't know. Does Ron Paul think the Air Force is unconstitutional?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The United States didn't have a separate Air Force during World War II, even. There was the Army Air Force and the Navy Air Force.
Right.
So there was an awareness of the problem. But finally, people said, this is ridiculous. And they recognized that the Constitution is meant to be flexible. If it's a document that was created over 200 years ago, the framers themselves, who were very farsighted and who were men, they were men of the Enlightenment, understood that that they needed to draft in generalities. And for the most part, that's what they did. And those generalities were understood and intended by them to be flexible and open to both interpretation and change over time.
The Constitution also refers to the president as him. And
yes.
So we may see a constitutional challenge to the next Hillary Clinton. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's a good example.
What about the preamble? I'm going to read the whole preamble. It's so short. We, the people of the United States, in order, and everybody knows this, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, remember those words, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. The takeaway this morning played the over-the-top Captain Kirk, William Shatner version of that from an old Star Trek episode, but promote the general welfare. Does that actually indicate that government is meant to be activist, to promote the general welfare, not just stay out of things?
I think that would actually be an unfair reading of the Constitution. The preamble is stating the overall goals, but one of the ways that we promote the general welfare is, of course, by giving and respecting the powers of the states. So I don't think one can assume that phrase necessarily anticipates a far-reaching federal government. The framers themselves, for the most part, did not imagine themselves as creating a federal government with large powers. They wanted a federal government that was much more powerful than the Articles of Confederation had established, which was a disaster. But they still believed in states' rights, basically, and they still believed that the federal government would be a government that enabled the nation to do what was necessary. So they would have given a more narrow understanding of promote the general welfare than simply saying that means the federal government can do anything that the federal government thinks promotes the general welfare.
Does the general welfare clause, though, have the force of law in any way? It is a preamble, so does it technically have the force of law?
The general assumption has been that the preamble does not have the force of law, that it's a useful form of information to bring to bear in interpreting the body of the Constitution, but in and of itself, it's generally been thought not to have the force of law.
Andrew and Dyker Heights.
One of the more interesting things, by the way, about the preamble is the we the people, because in the Articles of Confederation, it was the states who formed the articles, and in the Constitution, the original drafts followed that and basically said the states essentially in order to form a more perfect union and so on. And it was a fundamental change to go from the states to go to we the people. There was a recognition that the United States was ultimately a bond formed among the people themselves, not just between the states.
And as they get ready to read the Constitution momentarily on the House floor, Andrew in Diker Heights has a thought about how they may cast the parts. Hi, Andrew.
Hello. I just had more of a comment. I'm assuming they're going to be reading the original text, and was curious who's going to get stuck with the three-fifths of a human being with regards to other persons, meaning slaves.
That's a great question. Yeah, there are parts of the original Constitution that are certainly embarrassing, and the three-fifths clause comes in later. It comes in the 14th Amendment, but even the fugitive slave clauses in the original Constitution, which require states to return escaped slaves to their masters, and there's the importation clause, which essentially allows states to import slaves until 1808. So, yeah, there's a lot in the original Constitution and later that's embarrassing.
So I can't wait till the video clip makes YouTube of John Boehner reading some of those clauses, right?
Well, the framers actually were careful. So they don't use words like slaves, and they don't use the phrase slavery. So they managed to draft all of this in ways that if you read it, unless you understood what they were talking about, it wouldn't automatically be clear.
Danny in Long Island City, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, Brian. I want to comment on my favorite part in the preamble, which is it's two words, which is more perfect, in order to form a more perfect union. And I just think intrinsically the framers were saying, listen, there's going to be issues. We know coming down the line we're going to need to amend this thing. We're not going to be perfect. It doesn't say to form a perfect union. It says to form a more perfect.
Nice.
And I think that leaves a lot of latitude for, you know, change. So when they politicize the Constitution to help enact legislation, you know, I think you really need to step back and say, listen, strict constructionalists, in fact, should understand they need to be flexible. They're trying to make it more perfect. This wasn't a perfect document, not a perfect country, but as long as you just understand we're trying to get better,
yes,
that should be it. I think that's about it.
Thank you very much. One of our It's a Free Country bloggers, Justin Krebs, and we have three of them up there posting their favorite portions of the Constitution, if you want to read that, folks. But Justin Krebs said his favorite is the 18th Amendment, the one that repeals the previous amendment, which enacted prohibition, showing that it is a living document. Of course, passing a constitutional amendment is a heavy lift. You know, the states have to get involved in everything else. So it's not just like passing a law. And that, I think, is one of the points that the Republicans are trying to make.
Well, I think the interesting thing about that, though, is, first of all, it's true that the United States Constitution is the most difficult constitution in the world to amend. And the framers didn't intend that, in fact. I mean, after all, they enacted 10 amendments immediately. But what's happened is that it's become so difficult to amend the Constitution that there has become, as a practical matter, a need for flexibility of interpretation. And therefore, both from the standpoint of the role of the courts, there's a much greater need of courts to be aware of the fact that, for example, the Air Force is not included in the Constitution.
Yeah.
That doesn't make the creation of the Air Force unconstitutional.
Right.
And of Congress in recognizing that its powers have to be interpreted without needing every single time there's a problem to amend the Constitution.
Right.
So in theory, we could have said you can't have an Air Force unless you amend the Constitution to create one. But amending our Constitution is so complicated that it's much easier just to basically draw the inference that Army-Navy does not mean to be exclusive. It means to say the military units of the United States, and if technology changes, there could be other aspects of that.
We're almost out of time, and listeners, again, we're going to do this in a longer version, including your favorite portions of the Constitution, next week with a liberal constitutional scholar and a conservative constitutional scholar, and your favorite portions. So go and post them to itsafreecountry.org. But do a little lightning round with me, Professor Stone, on some of the things that I came up as I was reading the Constitution last night, okay? Article 1, Section 6, where it says the senators and representatives shall receive compensation for their services. It never says they'd get a pension.
Well, right, but compensation, of course, can mean A whole range of different forms of compensation.
Doesn't exclude a pension. How
right.
about this? Article 1, Section 8, to raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be for a longer term than 2 years. Were they restricting all wars to 2 years?
Well, they were restricting appropriations. I mean, they were basically saying that, they were very uneasy about standing armies, and they were very uneasy about the ability to, commit ourselves to long-term engagements. And so the idea was there needed to be reappropriations in order to review the question as to whether or not the appropriations for military purposes should be continued.
And we still follow that?
Yeah.
Just as the normal appropriations process?
Correct.
And finally, Article 2, Section 3, about the president's powers. One of the clauses here is calling together the Houses of Congress, and then it says he may adjourn them to such time as he shall think proper. Does the president have the power to suspend Congress?
That's a good question. I don't know. Yes, he does have the power. I don't know that that power is used, or if it is used, I don't think it's ever been controversial.
Okay, we will.
I mean, I'm not aware of any disputes that ever arisen.
Right, as I say, it's just a random thing that I came across.
Right.
This clause, it says he may, on extraordinary occasion, convene both houses or either of them, and in case of disagreement between them with respect to the time of adjournment, he may adjourn them to such time as he shall think proper.
So, right.
All right. Again, listeners, this is the beginning. It's going to be interesting to hear how they actually do read the Constitution on the House floor coming up shortly. We will be streaming that on our politics website. It's a freecountry.org. Who will they assign to read some of the more embarrassing original sections having to do with slavery and such? Who will get the privilege of reading the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments, which abolish slavery and more equal rights for everybody? We see one blog now that says they're actually not going to read the whole thing. They're going to leave some parts out. That might be to avoid the YouTube videos. But post your favorite portions of the U.S. Constitution to our politics website. It's a freecountry.org, and we'll do this in a longer version next week. Jeffrey Stone, professor of law at the University of Chicago, chair of the board of the American Constitution Society. Very informative, and thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up, we begin a series called Money, You.